Hi, I'm Jen Psaki, and welcome to Diplopod, a podcast presented by the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. In every episode, our goal is to help make sense of the biggest foreign policy issues around the world by bringing in voices from around the world. In this episode, we begin a new series called Avoiding Nuclear Collisions, which we'll be focused on for the next 2 months. We're going to examine the dual nuclear threats of Iran and North Korea from perspectives around the world. First up is the view from Russia. And with me in the studio in Washington is Dmitry Trenin, director of Carnegie's Moscow Center. Dmitry, welcome. I want to start by having you share a little bit of your background with the audience. Where were you before Carnegie?
Well, Jen, first of all, it's a privilege to be on this podcast with you. I've only had two employers in my life. The one before Carnegie was the Soviet and then briefly Russian military. So I spent 21 years in uniform between 1972 and 1993. And that career took me to a lot of places, starting with Iraq, and then on to East Germany, West Berlin, eventually to places like Italy and Switzerland, and then I quit.
And here you are, on Team Carnegie.
Oh, absolutely. I've been on that team since 1994.
Good. Well, thanks for that. I think that's helpful for the audience to hear. So we're going to spend our time talking about the dual nuclear threats from Iran and North Korea and really the perceptions from Russia, your beliefs, what the Russian government thinks. But I want to start first with what's happening in the United States. We're living through a momentous week here in the United States with the indictment of two high-level Trump campaign officials, the guilty plea of a foreign policy advisor. This isn't just going to have an impact domestically. It certainly will likely have a continued fallout on the U.S. relationship with Russia. Is that something that is being consumed by the people in Russia? How are people consuming and digesting it? And what do you think, and what is the Russian government perception of what's happening in the United States right now?
Well, I think the United States has been on Russia's daily show ever since the election. People were amazed, I think they still are, by the intensity of the attention still given to the Russia role in the presidential election. I think people in Russia may differ on whether the Russian government was involved or to what extent the Russian government was involved. But most of them would say, even if it happens, so what? I mean, computer systems get hacked. Sensitive information is divulged. We're living in the age of information warfare, and this is the tool that you're using against your opponent, your competitor. So why all the fuzz? For a lot of people in Russia, what's happening in the United States is described as hysteria or circus. The problem is, though, that a lot of people, including, I believe, people in the government, do not fully realize the full extent to which this meddling, and I would say, in my view, there was meddling by Russia in the U.S. election, legitimate as seen by Russia in this environment of information warfare, but they failed to see early on the implications, which are pretty negative for Russian interests, for the U.S. policy toward Russia or the U.S. attitudes toward Russia.
On North Korea, what is Russia, I know you've written about this too, what is Russia willing to do? What role could they play in resolving this moving forward? And what do they want to see the outcome be at the end of the day?
Well, first of all, North Korea is where North Korea is. And I hope that our listeners realize that Russia has a land border with North Korea. If North Korea were situated where New Zealand is, I think Russia would care far less for what's happening in that country. But Russia's major Pacific port city of Vladivostok is just a couple of hundred miles away from the main nuclear test site in North Korea. So Russia certainly wants to avoid, wants to help to avoid a conflict, a shooting war in Korea, which might have nuclear overtones. This is one. Two, I think the Russians are realist in understanding that the conflict is, the main, the most important parties to the conflict are the United States and Pyongyang, the regime in North Korea, the DPRK. China plays an important role as a, let's say, second-tier power, but China can only do so much and will only do so much. China will not deliver Kim's head on a platter to Mr. Trump in Washington. Russia is some kind of a third-tier party that can be of use should there be willingness in Washington and Pyongyang to start some kind of a conversation. Russia is the other major power next to China that has its own connection with North Korea and has its personal relationship with the North Korean leadership. The North Koreans are virulently nationalistic. They are very resentful of Chinese tutelage and China's former hegemony in Korea. So in a way, if they were to make a step toward some sort of a dialogue with the United States, they might decide that they are better off with Russia serving as an intermediary or as a facilitator of the dialogue, because surrendering to Russia means nothing. I mean, Russia is not the country North Korea would surrender to. If North Korea were to turn to China as an intermediary, that might look like North Korea surrendering to the historical hegemon. But as I said, Russia's role is very much dependent on whether the main antagonists in this conflict, i.e. Washington and Pyongyang, agree to start some kind of a dialogue if not solving the issue. I do not believe in the possibility of denuclearizing North Korea, but limiting the dangers that come from the North Korean drive to have a nuclear deterrent vis-a-vis the United States.
So if Russia were to be the go-between of getting a diplomatic dialogue started, what do you think the time frame, how long do we have for that to happen? And what conditions can that happen when there is the threat of military action from the United States and from both sides? Is that an important part of it? Or what conditions need to exist for that to move forward?
Well, I think that North Korea is only willing to talk, or will only be willing to talk, when they think they have a deterrent in their inside pocket. A deterrent, as I understand, can only be a guaranteed capability to bring a nuclear warhead to the territory of the United States of America. Now, the question is, and I think the only question is, if we're talking about dialogue, what part of the territory of the United States of America we're talking about? Is this only Guam, or does that have to include, in the North Korean thinking, the west coast of the United States? Or does it have to include Washington, D.C., the seat of power? I think if Russia were to involve itself in this dialogue, I can imagine the Russians basically telling the North Koreans that, with the systems that you have, you already possess some kind of deterrent power vis-a-vis the United States. You don't need to have the kind of deterrent that the Soviet Union had during the Cold War. In the present conditions, what you actually need is being able to reach a portion of soil under an American flag, and that is, let's say, Guam. If you guys push your luck too far, you will provoke the United States into military action. You will not going to survive as a result. It means that a lot of people will not survive either. And it means a lot of people will be affected, including us. So we have a stake in you resolving that issue with Washington sooner rather than later. I think the time frame will depend very much on the progress of the North Korean nuclear and missile programs, and on the, and even more importantly, on the conclusion that the North Korean leadership, i.e. the current leader, Kim III, make on the basis of that progress. So I think that it's like all things nuclear, we're talking about perceptions. We're talking about capabilities that we hope will never be used. But it's still the tragedy of the situation is that you can only rely on a capability that you might actually use. And you believe that the other side believes that you can use it at will. In other words, I think we need to act pretty fast. We don't know enough about Kim Jong-un's plans. And I will tell you frankly, the Kremlin is not all assured that the administration of Donald Trump, and including the president, will always exercise their best judgment. They can go for something that can turn out to be a disaster. Preemptive strike, a preventative war. We thought for a very long time that these options were too risky for the United States, that the United States would never be, would never have 100% chance of taking out all relevant military nuclear missile installations in North Korea, and that gave us some kind of reassurance. I think this is being revised, this perception. The United States might take a risk under the present administration that it was not willing to take under the previous administrations. So from the Moscow perspective, you have Kim, who is clearly provocative or overly provocative. But on the other hand, you have a president of the United States who is equally much more unpredictable than any of his predecessors.
So one last question on North Korea. There's been, on the flip side, some skepticism about whether Russia would want to play a role. They reportedly weakened some of the UN Security Council resolution related to North Korea recently. There's speculation that they're maybe protecting China. You may disagree with all of that, but what point do you think they might play a proactive role, if ever, in addressing North Korea? Or is it just not on the top of the priority list?
Well, I think that if the Russians feel that a war is imminent, I believe they will have to act somehow. The war is too close to Russia. Well, potential war is too close to Russia's borders, and they will have to act somehow.
On Iran, I just want to get there before we wrap up here. In Russia, obviously, played an important role on negotiating and finalizing the nuclear deal. And President Trump has recently decided not to certify the deal. It's going through its process in Congress. What impact will that have if there are sanctions that are snapped back on Russia's role, on Russia's engagement? What is the perception of this process at this point?
Well, I think, again, the perception is that the actions by President Trump do not serve either the regional peace or the U.S. long-term interest. Now, if there's an upside to what's happened so far, is that President Trump has not decided to withdraw from the JCPOA, the agreement with Iran that you're talking about. So he has decertified, yes, or rather he failed to certify. He pushed the ball into the Congress, into the court of the U.S. Congress. to a degree, as long as the GCPOA, JCPOA is still in place, that might serve some tactical Russian interest. Iran's rapprochement with the West, in particular with the United States, will have slowed down, and with the U.S., it may have already stopped. And that makes Iran more reliant on Russia and China and a couple of other places. For Russia, Iran is potentially a very important player in Asia and the Middle East. They take Iran seriously as a player. They want Iran to join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So tactically, Russia may benefit from that, but only as long as the JCPOA is in place. And there, Russia has the countries of Europe as well as China as its allies.
Well, Dmitry, thank you for your candid answers and for being our guinea pig. It was a pleasure having you on DiplomatPod today.
Thank you. You bet.
Episodes of Carnegie's DiplomatPod are available from Carnegie's website, carnegieendowment.org, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume podcasts. Follow us at Carnegie DiplomatPod. I'm Jen Psaki. Thanks for listening.